Investing is a long-term process. How many times can you think of in the last decade that the stock market has destroyed retirement funds for people just like you and me? For your existing IRA, you need the security that gold has provided for centuries. Remember, gold has never been worth zero. Capital Gold would like to introduce you to the Home Storage Gold IRA. It's a self-directed IRA set up with all the protection and tax benefits of an LLC. But the big difference in this IRA is you invest in gold and you hold it in your possession. You can't do that with stocks. That's security. You can transfer any type of IRA hassle-free in days. Please call right now and learn more, and we'll waive the $500 setup fee and give you a free safe to store your gold. Call 800-223-0092. 800-223-0092. 800-223-0092. That's 800-223-0092.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, syndicating across the country on the Business Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio, WYBC.com, and 1490 AM WGCH, Greenwich, Connecticut. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business, along with the business of politics and sports. Why weren't any banks or bank executives held accountable for the financial crash beyond paying settlements? Were they too big to jail? A new leaked Department of Justice complaint shows the government did have intent before settling once again to go after J.P. Morgan, charging mortgage fraud. CEO Jamie Dimon's $13 billion secret revealed. William D. Cohen, special correspondent at Vanity Fair. He's also a former investment banker. Been on our show many times. He's got bestsellers that we've had him on for, in fact, on Goldman Sachs, Follow Bear Stearns, Duke Lacrosse Scandal. The leaked document is from the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of California, would have filed it, a draft complaint and demand for a jury trial, U.S. versus J.P. Morgan Chase, and Bill's article on it was in Vanity Fair, Jamie Dimon's $13 billion secret revealed. Thanks for coming on again, Bill.
Thank you for having me, Jim.
The first question is, just give the quick overview in a nutshell. What was uncovered in this leaked document?
You know, essentially, across Wall Street, bankers and traders were packaging up mortgages that should never have been made, should never have been given to individuals to buy homes, because the chances of them paying back those mortgages were very small, and the bankers and traders knew that, but they were packaging up these mortgages into securities, creating what was called mortgage-backed securities, getting fees for those mortgage-backed securities and selling them off as investments all around the world. And unfortunately, every bank on the street was doing that, and they were rewarding their bankers and traders with big bonuses for doing that, even though they knew, certainly by the end, that the mortgage-backed securities that they were packaging up and selling were faulty, were not good investments, and then they passed them off as good investments. Well, J.P. Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon, tried to convince everybody that J.P. Morgan Chase was somehow different from all of that and didn't do any of that, was somehow a purer than Lot's wife, and decided that that was going to be his mantra. And this complaint, which the Justice Department drafted but never filed, was used to prove that that was a lie to J.P. Morgan Chase, and that's what eventually got J.P. Morgan Chase to settle in November of 2013 and pay a, you know, $13 billion fine. You know, when they started off their negotiation earlier that year, I think J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon offered $1 billion to settle, and the Justice Department wanted like $25 billion, and this is the document that got them to the 13 to settle, to show that, that actually this myth that Jamie Dimon was spinning was just that, that this idea that somehow J.P. Morgan Chase wasn't engaged in this activity, and that the Justice Department was blaming J.P. Morgan Chase for, in effect, rescuing Bear Stearns and Washington Mutual, and was coming after it despite having sort of saved the financial system by buying those two firms. and pretending that J.P. Morgan itself hadn't engaged in any of that activity. Well, this document put the lie to all of that, and it was hidden for the last 4 years, and finally it surfaced.
And, in fact, we'll talk about that some of the loans they packaged were from Chase that felt that met that wholly deficient category. And the $13 billion, right, and $7 billion of it did end up being tax-deductible, so we picked it up the tab kind of anyway. Is that true? Or?
A portion of it, yes, turned out to be tax-deductible, yes. So, and of course, not only did taxpayers pick up a portion of it, I mean, I think $9 billion of it was cash, $4 billion of it was in various mortgage relief benefits for people who had taken out mortgages, and of course, all of it came out of their shareholders' money. None of it came out of Jamie Dimon's pocket. So all of these settlements were with shareholders' money, which I find also deeply ironic and disturbing. I mean, the bad behavior was done by individuals, and it's the shareholders who, you know, end up paying the fines.
You point out in the book, I think Jamie Dimon got a 70% raise in 2013, the very year they settled.
For settling, he got a 20, you know, his bonus, his compensation that year was $20 million, a 70% raise, because, you know, the board congratulated him for settling this litigation for $13 billion using shareholders' money. I mean,
you can't make it up, no. Does this expose as a lie that the Obama administration, Attorney General Eric Holder, just said there was not enough evidence of intent to go after any of these guys? Does this put that to a lie?
Well, Jim, I've never believed that. I mean, that to me remains one of the biggest head-scratchers of the entire financial crisis, is why the Justice Department did not choose to prosecute the wrongdoing that was so obvious. I mean, they knew it themselves. I mean, that complaint, which lists 10 separate incidents, and there could have been 100 more probably, but 10 specific incidents where J.P. Morgan Chase underwrote and sold a mortgage-backed security, which it knew contained mortgages that did not meet its credit standards and should never have been underwritten and sold, knew. So that's intent, knew, knowingly did it. There were 10 instances cited in that complaint. And that's just at J.P. Morgan Chase. I know from writing my Bear Stearns book that at Bear Stearns they did the same thing. We know from the Goldman settlement, an abacus, that Goldman did many of the same things. I mean, this was widespread. There was absolute fraud going on. There was absolute deceit. There was absolute intent. And after the Justice Department, the Eastern District of New York in Brooklyn went after the two Bear Stearns hedge fund managers and failed to get a conviction, that basically chilled the whole effort to prosecute these guys, and it's an absolute mystery.
Do you think from this document, was it really designed to coerce a monetary settlement, which it ended up doing, so in other words, a big bluff, putting leverage on them, or do you think that the attorney there, I guess his name was Benjamin or
Ben Wagner. Yes.
Ben Wagner. That he really wanted to go after him in court.
Well, I talked to because I wrote a story in the Nation a few years ago. There was a cover story about this settlement, and I talked to Ben Wagner. And my impression was that he was a U.S. attorney, he was a prosecutor in the Eastern District of California. I think he wanted to prosecute J.P. Morgan, but I think, of course, he works for Eric Holder, and I think my sense is that he would have liked to have prosecuted, but there were sort of bigger factors at play which sort of mitigated an actual prosecution and a push towards settlement. I think that it was a serious document. There's no doubt about it. It's 93 pages long. It lists problem after problem. It uses strong language about what J.P. Morgan Chase did wrong. It puts the wood to the myth that Jamie Dimon was trying to create, that somehow J.P. Morgan Chase, the bank, was different. It did not engage in these things. So I think it was a very serious document. I don't know whether or not there was any willingness or interest or excitement or enthusiasm about actually engaging in a prosecution, which frankly they of course should have done. They should, not have settled. If you ask me, I think they should have, at least more than the Bear Stearns case, they should have gone after and actually had trials, if for no other reason, to show that A, they knew how to still do it, and B, that they could actually muster evidence to show the American people what exactly went wrong here, instead of covering it up, which is what these settlements did. They, instead of releasing this 93-page complaint, this draft complaint, they put out that 11-page statement of facts, which was utterly anodyne, completely whitewashed, the whole thing. I mean, so the American people deserve to know what happened here.
Do you think that because the J.P. Morgan started at $1 billion and got up to $13 billion, that this was driven by Jamie's desire to keep this document from ever getting public?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I think when I wrote that story a few weeks ago and the document was out there, he called me up and yelled at me because he didn't want that out there. He had predicated his whole, look, there's so much myth-making on Wall Street, especially at the highest levels. I mean, he had created this myth that somehow J.P. Morgan Chase, his bank, was different and apart from all the others, from the Goldmans and the Morgan Stanleys and the Bear Stearns and the Merrill Lynches, that they were somehow better better actors. And this just completely...
the last man standing, right?
Exactly. The last man standing.
Next, under the hood at J.P. Morgan's fraud scheme. You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell. How do we fix and Jamie's legacy?
I'm getting older. Do I need to worry about falling?
Yes, you do. Each year, 1 in 4 people 65 and older will experience a fall, and many will be serious. The majority of falls happen at home, so remove things that could make you trip and install handrails to keep you steady. To learn more about the steps you can take to help prevent a fall, please talk to your doctor. You can also visit aarpfoundation.org or medicaremadeclear.com/falls. This message was brought to you by United Healthcare and AARP Foundation.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
There's more than one way to invest in your education. Investing in the right products, securities, and real estate generates secure and sound futures. What about an investment that retains its value? Consider college real estate. College real estate can provide housing for students and generate returns for their families. Through this special offer from Austin iLabs, you can download the free workbook from collegerealestate.com to see if this investment is right for you. Go to collegerealestate.com/radio.
Do you want to fly somewhere, anywhere in the world? Smart travelers call myflightsearch.com for the best deals on flight tickets. Going to Manila, Bangkok, London, how about Singapore? Call myflightsearch.com for the lowest flight tickets available. What about a local vacation? Let's say you want to fly to Vegas, Orlando, Miami, Los Angeles, or Denver. Pick up the phone and call myflightsearch.com right now. We have exclusive deals that you can't find anywhere else. The only way you can get these low airline prices is by calling us. We have so many low prices available, we can't possibly tell them to you right here and now. If you're flying somewhere anytime in the next 6 months and you want the lowest airline ticket prices anywhere, you owe it to yourself to save a ton of money. So pick up your cell phone and call myflightsearch.com right now.
Call 800-303-3398. 800-303-3398. That's 800-303-3398. Call now, 800-303-3398.
How old are you? 25, 35, 50, or older? If you have pain, we can help. Do your knees hurt?
Ow!
Let me ask you again. Are your knees killing you?
Oh, yeah. Are they ever?
What about your back? When you bend over, does it feel like this? How about when you get out of bed in the morning? If you're like me, your knees and back feel like this.
Oh, that hurts.
I found a company called the Pain Relief Hotline. They specialize in ways to treat your knee, back, and neck pain without surgery or taking medications. The good news is if you have insurance, you may have little or no cost or out-of-pocket expense. I've used them. It works. Call the Pain Relief Hotline now for free information. 800-303-4607. 800-303-4607. Call now. 800-303-4607. That's 800-303-4607.
Biz Talk Radio.
Our guest, leading Wall Street investigative journalist Bill Cohen. He's got a recent article in Vanity Fair, Jamie Dimon's $13 billion secret revealed. Let's look under the hood a little bit, because you really can't come away with any other intent than fraudulent. They consistently violated their own due diligence standards, and they would send a piece of these out for third-party review. And they were getting back things like, well, 25% of these are defective, other pools 42%. And J.P. Morgan would then manipulate the amount of defective allowed. The fallout rates were allowed to be 3%, meaning if they were bad, they would put in other ones. They were three times that high. They covered that up. They represented that 100% of the due diligence was followed on all of these things. What do you think?
Well, we obviously know that that is not true. We know that they, look, this is not very complicated, James. This is all about the incentive system on Wall Street,
yeah,
which rewarded mortgage bankers and traders for packaging up these mortgages and selling them off as securities. They got big fees. The big fees led to big revenues, led to big bonuses. Very simple. That's what everybody wants. They want the big bonus. So the incentive system drives the behavior. And that's the way it's been since these firms started going public in 1970, when DLJ broke the New York Stock Exchange rules and went public and changed the gestalt on Wall Street forever from a partnership culture to a bonus culture. And that has not changed in the wake of the financial crisis. That, to me, remains a major, major flaw of Wall Street that needs to be changed immediately if anyone has the guts to do it. But they were being rewarded to do this, and they were going to do whatever it took to get that done. You know, I don't know if you know, my friend Richard Bowen, who was a whistleblower at Citigroup, they did the exact same thing. This has been written about at Citigroup, and now J.P. Morgan, this complaint shows that J.P. Morgan Chase was doing exactly the same thing that Richard Bowen, you know, he went on 60 Minutes, he's written about him in the New York Times, the exact same thing that happened at Citigroup, happened at J.P. Morgan. Matt Taibbi at Rolling Stone wrote about Elaine Fleischman, who was the whistleblower at J.P. Morgan Chase. You know, all these people who had the guts to come forward, like the Richard Bowens and the Elaine Fleischmans, to tell people what was going on, to tell their bosses that this was not right. Instead of fixing that, instead of stopping that bad behavior, what happened time and time again? The whistleblower got fired, and they kept on packaging up this crap into mortgage securities and selling it off so they could get their bonuses.
Now, Jamie has always maintained that the bad stuff was in Bear and WaMu,
right,
and he bought those only because he was doing a favor to save,
right,
global capitalism. But in the Chase pools, they were finding 23% of the portfolio were deficient, which is pretty amazing. Some other stats that blow me away: some of the appraisals were so inflated on the properties that they varied 70% from the market. In some, the broker employees were getting mortgages on fictional liar loans income, you know, meaning part of, they were no arm's length, they were part of the mortgage broker. And then something I haven't heard of, these silent seconds, which are subordinated liens on these mortgages, meaning the investors really didn't even have access to them till after the subordination. Some of them, 65% of the portfolio, the loan to value was 93% average, meaning that their entire income would have to go to cover this. So how could there be any, how could somebody have turned their back on this stuff?
Well, first of all, as you point out, I mean, any way to game the system, they had figured out how to do it. So they gamed the checks and balances. They gamed the third-party providers who were analyzing, who they had hired to analyze the mortgages. They obviously gamed the rating agencies to give them the AAA rated, to rate these securities AAA, even though, of course, they weren't. So everybody was being paid. Everybody was gaming. Everybody knew it was wrong. There was clearly fraud. And again, why do people do these things? Why do people do things that are obviously wrong? That's the question that, we've been wrestling with as part of human nature forever. But I'll tell you what exacerbates it in this case is the reward system, the incentive system that rewards them for bad behavior, because all the incentive system cares about on Wall Street is generating revenue, generating those fees that the sale of a mortgage-backed security represented. And that's why they just keep doing it until the market. No, you would think that when a Richard Bowen comes forward or an Elaine Fleischman comes forward in 2006 and says, hey, or 2005 and says, this is bad behavior, we should stop this, they would stop that. But that's not what happened. What happens is they get rid of the whistleblower and they keep perpetuating the bad behavior until the market tells them to stop. And the market didn't tell these banks to stop until 2007, which was when investors said, you know what, we won't buy these anymore, because we finally have come around to see that they're chock full of bad mortgages and we can't get, you can't pay us enough. We can't get enough of a return to take the risks that these securities represent. So you would think that the internal behavior, people would understand that it was wrong and change it and stop underwriting these securities.
But okay, fact, we got two more minutes in this segment. I want to get to one thing. You can say, well, we can't tie this to Jamie. He's the CEO. But simultaneously, towards the end, he ordered essentially the portfolio of J.P. Morgan to exit subprimes at the same time that they were pushing these even more aggressively on their own customers.
That's correct. Absolutely correct. And that's one thing that the complaint reveals. And there'd been some talk of that, but that is now in black and white in this draft complaint.
Should J.P. Morgan have been indicted? You mentioned Countrywide, Goldman Sachs, Lehman did repo 105. Should somebody have gone to jail?
Well, absolutely, somebody should have gone to jail. Individuals are named in this complaint. There individuals were named, cited by Richard Bowen at Citigroup. Individuals were named at Lehman Brothers. In the Veloukis examiner's report. So, of course, people should have gone to jail. Again, what we talked about at the beginning of the program was why Eric Holder's Justice Department did not prosecute these individuals. And, of course, Jesse Eisinger has written this wonderful book about...
Yes, we had him on.
You had him on. I think that begins to get at the reasons. But, of course, it doesn't, unfortunately, fully explain why Eric Holder did not push his U.S. attorneys to prosecute.
You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Stay with us. More with William D. Cohen.
You became a nurse for a lot of reasons. You care about people, and you love taking care of them. Being a nurse is who you are. But today, many medical facilities require nursing candidates to have bachelor's degrees, so you're probably going to want to have that degree. But you work. You may have a family. How can you possibly fit getting your bachelor's degree in your already tight schedule? With the online RN to BSN Bridge Program at Independence University, our online learning model helps you balance your work, your family, and your desire to move up in your nursing career. Class sizes are small and personal, and we're 100% focused on helping you through the program so you can earn your degree. An IU's online RN to BSN program is accredited by the Commission on Collegiate Nursing Education. Our goal is to help you achieve your goals. Independence University's online RN to BSN program. Call now.
888-904-1986. 888-904-1986. 888-904-1986. That's 888-904-1986.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
If you're suffering from hearing loss, stay tuned for a special offer from the makers of Listen Clear, a revolutionary hearing aid breakthrough designed by top audio engineers to fit your ear almost invisibly. Right now, you can try Listen Clear hearing aids absolutely free for 45 days. You can also qualify for free shipping and free batteries for life. Listen Clear hearing aids are so lightweight and comfortable, you can wear them all day long. They're practically invisible too, so others won't even notice you're wearing them. And the best part is, you'll be able to hear almost everything, everywhere. So do something about your hearing loss. Call Listen Clear now to get started with your 45-day risk-free hearing aid trial. This special offer won't be available for long, so call Listen Clear now.
800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. We're here 24 hours a day to help. That's 800-716-4650.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-350-3241. 800-350-3241. That's 800-350-3241. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM-19, Oregon DM-80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission. License number DC-32.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back with Bill Cohen. He's written the book, Why Wall Street Matters, and we're going to get to what he thinks is the root of the real problems in just a second, but I want to stay on this unintended consequences, trying to turn banks into utilities. I want to get your opinion on some of this Dodd-Frank stuff and how much should be torn up. Let me throw this stuff out at you. The Volcker Rule.
I mean, politically motivated, meaningless, barring banks from proprietary trading, which is one of the things it does, is ridiculous. That's one of the reasons Goldman Sachs was able to avoid a lot of the problems that other banks had, is because of its proprietary trading in 2006 and 2007 that saves the bank. Meaningless. Stupid.
Okay. On SIFI, the systemically important financial institutions take a big byproduct. GE actually ended up feeling they had to divest their entire financial side of their business, which was over half. Is SIFI a good idea?
Well, look, as somebody who started at GE Capital and knows the important role that GE Capital played. Now, maybe if GE shouldn't have its own finance arm, maybe that's the right business strategy, business decision, and obviously Jeff Immelt thought that it was.
Right.
But, I mean, ridiculous as well. I mean, look, we should get rid of too big to fail. I agree with David Stockman. If a firm gets itself into trouble, that's it. Let the market decide. Every other industry has a bankruptcy procedure. Wall Street should, too.
Now, you're critical of the living wills and the stress test, but if there's another crisis, how do people feel comfortable that a Citibank, for instance, which does seem to every 20 years get itself in almost out of business, that they can unwind themselves in a systemically or orderly way?
They can't. It's a myth. Oh, please. I mean, the idea that you were going to, things start hitting the fan, you're going to, dust off this, 2,000-page document called The Living Will and go through it page by page and see if it tells us what we should do, that's ridiculous. Nobody's just going to sort of sit around and look at that kind of a document when the crisis starts. And as a crisis unfolds, you have to be dealing with it in real time. And just because it says something on a piece of paper, that's hardly the way it's going to go down in real life. So, again, bureaucratic waste of time. People take comfort from something that has no meaning, and it's extremely expensive to do, just ridiculous.
All right, how about this one now? The crisis, obviously, particularly the credit default swaps, are so much more interrelated than people realized, that no one on Wall Street was looking at systemic risk from a sort of a global concern. And the FSOC, the Financial Stability Oversight Council, is supposed to do that. Is there a role for somebody to be looking at systemic risk from the top?
So we went from sort of light-touch regulation where there was no one, no regulators, no one from the SEC or the Fed inside these banks, to a situation now where, these banks are literally almost overrun by people from the Fed and the SEC looking over everything they do. Again, one extreme to the other. There has to be sort of medium regulation, some sort of oversight. But this idea that you're going to be able to, calmly unwind a huge bank during a financial crisis is ridiculous. Much better, as I'm sure we will get to talk about, is changing the compensation system, changing the incentive system on Wall Street so that people have the right incentives to do the right things or to avoid the wrong things.
Exactly, and we are about to jump to that. One last thing. So far we've torn up Dodd-Frank.
Deservedly so.
But what about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau? We just looked into that, and that also has not really evolved the way it should have. And it's also been captured by young liberal Democrats who don't understand business at all. But what do you think about the CFPB?
Okay, so we're now talking about Elizabeth Warren's baby.
Yes.
Actually, if she had been running it, maybe we would be hearing less of her instead of more of her. I think in theory, it's not a bad idea. I mean, consumers should be protected. There should be someone to protect consumers from bad actors. But, how about, consumers, taking responsibility for their own actions? I would never sign up for a mortgage without carefully reading, what interest I was paying and the payment schedule. I also wouldn't sign a mortgage knowing that I couldn't pay it back. So if people, took the time to read or understand what it is that they were doing, She talks about, well, what we're willing to protect people from a bad toaster, but not from a bad mortgage. Well, you know, if you don't read what you're getting yourself into when you're signing a mortgage, then that's partially your fault, and you should take responsibility for it. And if you did, you wouldn't have to worry. You wouldn't need a Consumer Protection Financial Bureau. So, plus, you know, it's a $500 million bureaucracy under the Fed. With, you know, what else is under the Fed without any oversight from Congress? Or, I mean, so I don't really understand the governance of the CFPB. You know, I guess in theory it's an okay thing, just more government bureaucracy that we could avoid if people just took responsibility for their own actions.
Yeah, and governance alone, I think it was unconstitutional for a while. We were told, too, that what they target is by size so they can drive fine maximization, not necessarily where the problem is the worst, which also seems a reversal of
right. I mean, you know, just creating another government agency bureaucracy just, you know, cries out for, systemic, example of systemic abuse.
Okay, now while you talk about, you know, bashing Wall Street has gone overboard, you are, and you've actually honed in exactly on where there is a big problem. The firm, the Street, used to be very partnership culture oriented, and now it's all other people's money. So dive in there.
Well, I mean, that is just from firsthand experience. Having worked at Lazard, which was a private partnership, and now, of course, it has gone public like the rest of Wall Street. I just think that when Wall Street was a series of private partnerships, basically undercapitalized, where all the money came from the partners and they had their full net worth on the line every day until they created LLCs and limited it to just the capital they put in the firm. Nevertheless, huge portions of their net worth were tied up in these firms, and so therefore they were rewarded for prudent risk-taking and focused on having pre-tax income instead of just generating revenue. That all was transformed when DLJ went public in 1970, when basically nobody was watching because we were focused on other things in this country, and changed Wall Street culture forever. So you went from a partnership culture to a bonus culture when people are now completely focused on Wall Street and generating as much revenue as they possibly can so they can march themselves into their boss's office at the end of the year and proclaim how much revenue they generated. Well, so when you focus on revenue generation as opposed to pre-tax profits, you're creating things like credit default swaps or mortgage-backed securities that are fee-generated issuances, and you're focused on just getting those things out the door and not the consequences ultimately of what happens. And you saw in 2007 and 2008, people were packaging up mortgages that should never have been made and selling them off as securities all around the world, getting fees for those sales, and then getting big bonuses as a result, without any taking into account any consequence whatsoever of what happens when those securities that were issued that should never have been issued in the first place. And it was all driven by people wanting a big bonus. And that is a big, big mistake. And nobody's talking about it. If Elizabeth Warren really cared about Wall Street and fixing Wall Street, that's what she'd be talking about, not, bashing bankers at every turn and somebody who wants to work in Washington and give up their lucrative Wall Street career. But nobody's talking about that.
Nobody is talking about that. What about inside the firms? I mean, firms that have looked at themselves, maybe Goldman Sachs, have they realized, why this thing got out of hand and that, these junk stuff got ended up warehoused on their balance sheet and in Merrill's case broke the bank?
So people think Wall Street is monolithic and that all these firms are the same. In fact, they're actually very different. I know that firsthand from working at a bunch of them, but just also, investigating and researching and writing about a bunch of them as well. I mean, Goldman, as I alluded to before, and as I wrote in my book about Goldman, had a very different risk culture than other firms. And for whatever reason, some good, some not so good, they became aware of the brewing crisis, took action against it, and basically was able to make money in 2008 from a proprietary bet against the mortgage market that other firms did not see or make, and therefore, like Merrill, lost a lot of money. So firms have different risk cultures. Some firms are good at it, some firms are not. Those that are not, by and large, are gone or should be gone. It's a real key asset of a place like Goldman Sachs to have a better risk management culture than other firms. You know, again, are firms introspective and looking at what they did wrong? No, not really. They're very, you know, they're just sort of moving on and getting on with it. And I think that real leadership on Wall Street would talk about changing the compensation system so this kind of thing never happens again.
30 seconds. Is it basically your message is you can't legislate human behavior, right?
Of course. I mean, there have been financial crises even before there was a Wall Street. You have to just reward people to do what you want them to do. People are pretty simple. They do what they're rewarded to do. And on Wall Street, they are still rewarded to take risks with other people's money. And if you want to change Wall Street, you have to change that.
Listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell from our flagship stations here, Radio WYBC and WGCH Greenwich. Our final segment will look about moving forward.
When did your light bulb go off? We're talking about that idea you have for a new product or app. Listen, if you want to make your idea a priority, but you don't know how to get it off the ground, you call Davison, the one company with over 25 years experience and exclusive process that turns ideas into products and apps that are found in retail stores and online. Our team has helped tens of thousands of people, just like you. Call now and ask for our free idea starter guide. We'll show you how to securely get started and protect your idea. Whether you have a patent or not, our process will get your idea ready to get in front of a corporation. Don't let your light bulb of an idea go out. Call Davison now for your free idea starter guide. Davison charges fees for services. 800-213-9256. 800-213-9256. 800-213-9256. Again, that's 800-213-9256. Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guided Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370, 800-605-5370, call 800-605-5370.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-595-6619. That's 800-595-6619. Again, 800-595-6619.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back with our final segment with Bill Cohn. He's an off-time critic of Wall Street, but he's telling us why we need Wall Street today. I want to just explore how changing to a more accountable partnership-like compensation structure, and how do you see implementing that? What you don't think the firm should take themselves private? How many people should be involved? Would there be clawbacks? How do you see it actually being implemented?
Requires leadership from the top of Wall Street, so it would have to be, you know, Lloyd Blankfein or Jamie Dimon, you know, sort of raising their hand and saying, this is something we need to do. That's number one. You're right. You're not going to take Goldman Sachs private. There's not enough capital in the world at the moment to support a buyout of Goldman Sachs, and then you'd lard it up with all this debt. It would be ridiculous. So that's not going to happen. So my idea is to require the top, say, 500 people at each of these firms, the people who make the decisions about who to hire and fire and how much they should get paid, what business lines to be in, how to allocate capital, you know, the machers at the top of these firms to once again have their full net worth on the line again. And by how to do that. And so I don't know. I know there's plenty of $1,000 an hour Wall Street lawyers who could help design a program to do this. But the basic idea is to give creditors and shareholders a first lien on the assets of these 500 people who run the bank in case, you know, something goes wrong in the case of a liquidation or a bankruptcy or a credit default. They would be able to make a claim against the full net worth of the top 500 people at these firms and, you know, go after their assets, their homes, their bank accounts, their art collections, their cars, whatever it is. Now,
wow.
I know people will, you know, roll their eyes and think that's absolutely ridiculous, but that's exactly the way Wall Street used to work for the first three quarters of Wall Street's existence, for the first 150 years until 1970. That's what most banks, exactly how most banks operated. So it's not a foreign idea. It's in their DNA. And the problem is that when you take that away, people take their eye off the ball. They think they make, you know, a lot of money, and they don't you know, have to worry about such things. You know, when I wrote House of Cards about Bear Stearns, I spoke to Jimmy Kane, who had lost $1 billion in the stock of Bear Stearns, and you would have thought that that would have devastated him and motivated him, you know, because he had so much on the line to, you know, pay attention to what was going on at Bear Stearns. And so I asked him about that, and I was really kind of interested and excited to hear his answer. My God, I'm talking to somebody who's lost $1 billion in their own stock. And instead of saying that he was devastated, he said, actually, it didn't affect him that much. It just really affected his heirs more than him. And, of course, he's still alive, so it hasn't affected his heirs yet. And the reason is it's because he had already taken out $400 or $600 million and turned it into cash and turned it into homes and bank accounts and all these other things. So even though he lost $1 billion, he still had $400 million lying around. And guess what? That doesn't affect his lifestyle. $400 million is plenty. Now, if he'd had the $1.4 billion on the line, or the $1.6 billion, as he told me, then that would have made a big difference.
So he might have focused. Yeah. You know, it's interesting that what you're calling for is actually a lot tougher than anything Elizabeth Warren is calling for.
Well, that's because I understand exactly what motivates people on Wall Street. Yeah. I mean, and you, if you did this, you could junk Dodd-Frank, you could junk the Volcker Rule, you wouldn't need a 21st century Glass-Steagall Act, you could stop vilifying Wall Street, you could get Wall Street back to doing what it does best, which is provide capital to people who need it and want it to grow their businesses, instead of vilifying Wall Street. You know, this would make everybody who works on Wall Street, the leaders of Wall Street, very focused on how Wall Street functions and works best and would not take imprudent risks.
Let me ask you this. You'll get people will say right off the bat, oh, well, the investment bankers will quit. They're not going to put up with that. You don't buy that, right?
I don't buy that because, look, investment bankers are the most risk-averse people in the world. Where else can you go to work and putting up none of your own capital, zero, and getting paid millions of dollars a year in bonuses if you're good at what you do? There's no other place in the world that you can do that. So, I mean, if you're in a hedge fund or a private equity fund or starting a company, you've got your own capital on the line. If you work at Goldman Sachs, you basically have none of your own money on the line, and you're expecting to get millions of dollars in compensation. Well, guess what? That means you're a collection of risk-averse people. Yes, some people will decide, this is not for me. But what if you go to a hedge fund or a private equity fund? You're going to have some of your own capital on the line, so you can't be naive about these things. You know, and besides, at some point it has to be about more than just how you can just game the system. At some point you have to, do the right thing.
Good point.
For the American people.
You have another pretty creative or different idea, which is the DOJ should regulate, the Department of Justice should regulate Wall Street, not the Fed.
Well, I mean, my point there is that the DOJ should hold Wall Street accountable for wrongdoing, and in this case, after 2008, failed to do that. Into that vacuum, because nature abhors a vacuum, into that vacuum where no one was held accountable, the regulator stepped in to try to hold Wall Street accountable, and as we were talking about before, turn them into utilities. When that's, ends up penalizing the American economy, as Larry Summers has talked about, secular stagnation, condemning us to 2% growth, because the engine of the American economy, Wall Street, is gummed up with all this sand from regulators who are trying to, slow it down and turn it into utilities. Well, if the Justice Department had done its job by holding people accountable for the wrongdoing they had done, instead of abdicating on that, you wouldn't have regulators and politicians jumping into that vacuum to try to make sure that Wall Street never causes another financial crisis, which is ridiculous. That's against human nature, and that's not what we want Wall Street to do.
We're down to the last minute. What do you think is going to come out of Trump populism? Do you think eventually that there won't be that much change on the street?
Well, I think, again, he's telegraphed that he intends to, blow up Dodd-Frank, the Volcker Rule, and get the economy going again by unleashing the animal spirits of Wall Street, which basically, in theory, I think is a good thing. But we're at a moment where we need a scalpel, because to some of these rules and regulations, because some of them are quite useful, like requiring higher capital requirements, requiring derivatives to be traded on exchange, not allowing as much leverage into the system. Some of that is very useful, and unfortunately, Donald Trump is kind of a sledgehammer kind of a guy and not a scalpel kind of a guy, so I'm not optimistic that he's going to do the right thing.
And I'm sure you would say that this movement to change compensation ought to be going on concomitantly with any...
That should be part of the grand bargain
that
Trump and Wall Street engage in.
Fascinating insights, Bill, taking on the culture of Wall Street while protecting the overall mission of really getting our economy growing again. We need Wall Street working well. Thanks to William D. Cohen. The book is Why Wall Street Matters, another seminal book from Bill. Thanks to Bill Cohen for coming back once again. He's always welcome. Thanks to our national audience for listening, and we'll see everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The
opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. Biz Talk Radio.